morning. You are listening to WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania. This is the show Bespoke Rhythm with your host, Stu Bodicher. And this week, we're going to be having a show based off of a 2014 Boston Calling Music Festival. So the reason I'm doing this is because there was a court case involving the city of Boston and the organizers of the Boston Calling Music Festival. It was actually ruled upon this summer. So I'm just going to give some background on the case and sort of explain what happened and where it's at right now. Part of the reason I'm doing this is because I was at not that specific festival in 2014, but the one that was the fall festival that the incident happened at. But I was at the one in the spring and the one previously. So, so just some quick background before I get into this. These two guys that were hired by the city of Boston, Mayor Marty Walsh, were Kenneth Brissett and Timothy Sullivan. And essentially what happened is the Boston Calling Music Festival producers, basically the Crashline Production company who operates the festival, had to go to the city of Boston to get a bunch of permits for the location. They were doing it at City Hall Plaza. This is back before it was at Harvard in their sports arena, or rather their sports facilities. And essentially they applied for the permits. The two representatives of the state asked them if they would hire union workers. The company declined because it wasn't part of their contract. They had already hired non-union workers. And essentially they didn't get the contract for 3 months, so 3 days before the event was supposed to go on, they met again. The Crashline Productions people met with the city of Boston and essentially agreed to hire the union workers so that they're in hopes that they would get the permit on time. I think it was the liquor license that they were still waiting on. And essentially what the company started arguing was that this was a form of extortion and that the city basically forced them to hire union workers in order to get the permits that they needed. So that's a little bit of background. I'm going to get more into this as the hour goes on, and I'm going to start some music at this point. I'm going to play Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros, 40 Day Dream, Sincerity is Scary by the 1975, and All Our Love, and then I'll come back and say a few more words. So check it out, guys, and enjoy.
shame. It's just a self-referential way. It stops you having to be human. I'm assuming you'll balloon when you remove the dirty spoon and start consuming like a human. That's what I'm assuming. I'm sure that you're can't we be friends? Thank you.
All right, now returning to the case a little bit. So essentially, the case went to trial in 2016, and the two defendants, Brissett and Sullivan, were actually indicted on extortion charges under the Hobbs Act, which is rules that govern public corruption. And sort of the basis of the arguments on both sides were on the government side, they argued that Crashline Productions did not have to hire union workers because it wasn't a condition of the contract. But they also sort of argued that the company sort of feared losing future contracts with the city and decided to, in a gesture of good faith, hire the union workers for the city to sort of build on that relationship that they had started in 2016. The prosecution more argued that, and then they also argued that the two men never really had, who were being charged, had no control over the permitting process and were just trying to encourage the Crashline production to hire the union workers to get people of the city better paying jobs. That ruling ended up falling through in 2018 because the judge who resided over the appeal said that the men didn't personally benefit from the actions and thus they weren't responsible and were liable for, well, they weren't guilty, essentially. So now we're going to go back to some more music. I'm going to play Walking with a Ghost by Tegan and Sarah, All We Ever Knew by The Head and the Heart, Lampshades on Fire by Modest Mouse, and then Gold Rush by Death Cab for Cutie.
Before faith in geography to hold you in my memory. Corrupt. I'm sifting through these wreckage piles. Corrupt. Through the rubble of bricks and wire. Corrupt. Looking for something I'll never find. Corrupt. Looking for something I'll never find. Digging for coal in my neighborhood. Where all the old buildings stood.
All right, now getting back to the case a little bit. One of the interesting things that the prosecution tried to argue was actually that Brissett and his other city worker had a history of actually, well, Brissett specifically had a history of trying to sort of extort these events at City Hall Plaza, trying to get them to hire these union workers. So in 2014, the TV show Top Chef was actually trying to film in Boston, at City Hall Plaza being one of the locations for the show. And essentially, they argued that Brissett had ordered the film permits for the plaza to be held from the producers of the company until they hired union workers. And that Brissett had also told other locations for the show in the city that the company had declined to hire union workers, and a lot of those locations actually backed out of their agreement with the Top Chef show, and the production actually never happened. They did not end up filming it. So even though in this case Brissett was actually reprimanded by the city for his actions, the prosecution tried to argue that that was sort of a pattern of behavior that had been exhibited, and that it was likely that this was the same sort of situation with the Boston Calling people. So I'm going to come back in a little bit, play a couple more songs, and then give sort of the results, the recent results of the trial, which came out in August of this year. So now I'm going to play Don't You Eva, it's Boston, right, by Spoon, and then Red Eyes by The War on Drugs, and When Am I Going to Lose You, a new song by Local Natives.
Thank you.
All right, so I actually forgot to play some PSAs, so we're going to do that real quick. Sorry about that. And we'll get back to the war on drugs and local natives in a minute.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck as a gift to Dave2037, so he can spend it on things like anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman. Something cool like that. I think Dave2037 deserves it. He worked hard. What are you getting Steve2037?
I guess I was thinking Steve2037 would just fend for himself.
Well, all right. But don't expect to be borrowing my anti-gravity boots.
You want to have money in your future? You got to start saving now. Putting some money from every paycheck into a savings account or contributing to your 401k can make a big difference later. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Hey, let's just hope Steve 2037 doesn't get his hands on a cold time machine, because he is going to come back here and knock some sense into you.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Yeah.
All right, now just to sort of wrap up my little narrative here about the Boston Calling Festival case. So essentially in August, the courts came with their ruling, and Brissett, who was the tourism director, was found both guilty on both counts of conspiracy to commit extortion and extortion, whereas the co-defendant, who's sort of a lesser player in the whole thing, Timothy Sullivan, was found guilty just of the conspiracy charge, but not extortion, but not the actual extortion charge. So because of that, the men actually face a maximum of 20 years in prison and up to $250,000 in fines, though it's likely that the sentence will be significantly lower. And sort of the final arguments that both sides made, the prosecutors argued that they influenced the hosts of the festival to hire the union workers. Although the defense argued that the prosecution presented no evidence of threat or motive for personal gain, and that the men had simply been trying to do their jobs and broker a resolution between the festival and Boston's stagehand unions. And additionally, they actually argued that since there had been no threats, the reason for the delay in the permits, that was part of the problem, was that the permits weren't issued until a few days before the event, was that they were alcohol liquor license permits, essentially, and that there were concerns about public safety, because if you've ever been to Boston City Hall Plaza, it's a very open area, and they were worried about getting people in and out with safely and making sure that the drinking was contained to certain areas. I don't really know all that much detail about it, but yes. So that's sort of the result of the case so far. Not sure about the appeals process or whether it can be appealed or not. I haven't read any information about that. But a really interesting case, and sort of meaningful to me, because a friend of mine, actually, his brother was one of the worked for the company back in when I was in high school. So really cool, and sort of an interesting music-related news item. So yeah, gonna wrap things up for this week with a song called 24/7 by The Neighborhood, and then, rather appropriately, given the context of the ruling, a song called Janglin' by Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros. It's been really fun this week. Not really sure what I'm going to play next week before Thanksgiving, but I'll be back on Monday, and enjoy these last two songs, and thanks for tuning in, guys.